The Olympics were last in London in 1948. The war hadn't long ended and many were surprised the Games were going ahead. And writer and journalist Ulick O'Connor was selected as a possible for the 1948 Olympics. Now, he didn't make it onto the team in the final selection, but he was at the 1948 London Olympic Games. And when I spoke to him earlier, he described what those last Olympic Games in London were like.
The first thing is, especially after the war, everybody had been cut off on this island. Even in the north, we're involved in it, we're still cut off from Europe. And to be going out into this world, to London, I'd never been to London before, and to come into a city which was just recovering from the war was frightening, because there was still a good deal of damage there. But the English didn't seem to pay any attention to that. They just got down and got this exceptionally well-run machine going, and had a very triumphant Olympics, making it the best out of very little material to go ahead with.
And indeed, there were some absolute athletic superstars at the 1948 Olympics. Fanny Blankers-Cohen, Zapotec, names that really have their records have held.
Yeah, well, Zatopek was extraordinary. He's probably considered the best runner, middle distance runner of all time. He won the 5,000, 10,000 in different Olympics, and then he won the marathon.
All eyes are on the great Czech runner Zatopek, number 203. He's been well there from the start, and now to the front he goes with that devastating stride that took him to victory in the 10,000 metres.
But he used to run like a windmill. He used to flail his arms round in circles, and he always appeared to be dying on the track. His head was on one side. But he absolutely ran away with everything. And then, of course, it was in a way dominated by Fanny Blankers-Cohen, who's very good-looking and blonde and absolutely wonderful athlete.
Once more, it's a photo finish. But there's no doubt about the winner, Blankers-Cohen of Holland in 11.9 seconds.
And up to that time, women hadn't been looked on and the Olympics was terribly important. But she won four medals in different events, and she really, I think, paved the way for women's athletics.
Your own athletic history, you'd been quite a performer on the Irish pole vaulting stage yourself, hadn't you?
Yeah, well, I won the pole vault when I was still in Balmoral in Belfast in 1947. I was 17 at the time, and then later on I broke the record in Balmoral as well. I don't know why I always seem to jump higher in the north. I don't think it was political, but I was up there, and I did that in 1951. Tom McCauley had broken the record, and then I broke his record.
So I have to lay claim to that my father's record.
That's right, not Tom. And I knew him well. We were all sort of competing against one another. But in Belfast, I couldn't get my pole to the grounds to Balmoral, so I always used to get there was a very athletic-minded RUC sergeant who used to bring me out in a lorry with the pole to the grounds, because I couldn't get it on taxis and things. In those days, you carried your own pole around with you.
In those days, you and my father were pole vaulting with a rigid bamboo pole.
Yes, that's very important. We had these bamboo poles, which were virtually, and I actually that stopped my pole vaulting career, because if the next thing, the steel pole came in. But then the next one that came in was the fiberglass. And I remember Patrick Kavanagh, the poet, who was also a sports writer, coming to me, and he was from Monaghan, and he said, "You're finished," he says. He said they have a pole now for the pole vault, and it's no longer a pole vault. He said, "It's catapult." And that's what it was. And I wasn't able to sort of, I gave it up, actually. I couldn't, I'd already changed a bit, so I let the thing go.
But I was amused last night, or the night before, to watch the little debacle with the North Korean, South Korean flag, which delayed the beginning of the women's football. And I see at the Olympic Games you were at in 1948, there was another little row over medals over the British and the US team. What happened there?
The Americans won. They're a very good team, really crack sprinters. And England came second. And then one of the English judges said they passed the baton outside the area they were meant to. And they disqualified the Americans. And without letting the thing go to appeal, they just gave the gold medal to the English and took it back from the Americans. Well, then afterwards, they discovered, I don't think it was through film, but they discovered that the baton had been legally passed. So Jack Gregory, who'd got his gold medal, had to give it back.
And they put the gold medals in the post to the Americans.
That's right. They put it in the post to the Americans. They got them back in America.
Not much glory, though.
Yeah, exactly. The real glory of for an Olympic athlete is to stand on that pedestal and listen to the anthem being played.
What is the atmosphere like when you see someone going up to be given a medal for their country? What's the feeling in the stadium and the feeling for the athletes and the audience?
Well, I think it's always very positive, basically, because that's one of the things about Olympics. No matter what they say about the 1936 Games and politics, it does run over politics, and it's the world and the Olympic audience giving tribute to a great athlete, independent of race or religion or whatever other things divide people. I think sport did an amazing lot, and especially the Olympics. Jesse Owens had gone to the Olympics, the famous American sprinter, and ran with extraordinary aesthetic beauty, and won. It was a way of striking at the German principles of race.
You're right. Politics has always followed sport, and in many ways, Chariots of Fire, the wonderful award-winning film, has made Harold Abrams a name, a family name to a whole new generation who might not have heard of him. You sat next to him at 1948 at the Olympics.
Yeah, I sat next to him at the Olympics. Well, he won the Olympics in 1924, and he was sitting beside me at the. During most of the Olympics, because he was covering it for the Sunday Times. I found him a bit crabbed and not terribly enthusiastic about talking to young athletes or whatever I was there. And he was always involved in political matters later, but he was a great athlete. But he wasn't quite the genial figure that appears in the Chariots of Fire. And then, but the really interesting guy there was Eric Liddell, who won the 400 metres in the Olympics in 1924. Abrams won the 100 metres, and it was an amazing event because he had professional coaching in it, but he snatched it away from everybody, and it was due to his personal determination, I think, basically, that he won it. It was an extraordinary event.
Who were the outstanding athletes at the London Olympics in 1948?
Well, Zatopek was, of course, with those races, and Fanny Blankers-Coon, who I mentioned. Then there was another extraordinary man called Alistair McCorkadale. He was the fastest white man in the world. In the 100 metres, he did 10.4, and he beat the world... He didn't get placed, but he beat the world record holder into fifth place. But he nevertheless became the fastest white man in the world at the Olympics.
What are Ireland's hope for the Olympics this year?
Well, Katie Taylor, the woman boxer, I think, seems very likely to win. Has a very good chance of getting a medal. But otherwise, I don't know where we'll place. I can't see any particular area that we're likely to win a medal, but I think she's almost certain.
We always have quite a few good boxers from Belfast too, who are pretty renowned for that here as well. So you'll be watching the Olympics then from tonight?
Oh, I will, yes.
Every moment?
Oh, right through. Well, I'll pick my choice. I think you can get obsessed with it. I'll take the ones I want to watch.